this morning. I'm not going to have you turn to one passage this morning because we're going to look at several from the Old Testament prophets, one from Isaiah, one from Micah, and then or a couple from Isaiah, and then one from Zechariah. So you can jot them down and go back and read them later. All right, so let's get started this morning. Kids, everybody got a, all the kids got an outline this morning? All right, everybody, good? Everybody got an outline? All right, very good. All right, let's go over a memory verse. It should be on the screen behind you, and let's read it together. Is everybody ready? All right, here we go. Isaiah 40, 31. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Isaiah 40, 31. All right, very good. So a really long time ago, in the year 380 AD, a group of church leaders got together in Zaragoza, Spain. Does anybody know where that's at? I didn't know where it was at either. Sounded new to me. But anyway, church leaders gathered in Zaragoza, Spain, to discuss some mutual problems that the churches were having in the area, namely with a regional heretical group that was causing problems with the church. And so as they ironed out some of the issues and kind of coalesced around common doctrine and all that, one of the side things that came out of this was this thing that had been around but not really been in the way that it would become, this idea of Advent, right? Advent. The word Advent is actually the word our Advent comes from the Latin word Adventus, which comes from the Greek word parousia, which is really weird. I know y'all got a language lesson today. Oh, right? Anyway, long story short, the word Advent means coming, right? Means coming. And while not in 380 would it be what it is today, but over time, that event in 380 set us on the course for what we know today as the season of Advent, which is the four Sundays leading up to Christmas. And each Sunday has a theme. So there's hope, there's joy, faith, and peace, right? And so over the next four Sundays, we're going to take one of those themes and we're going to kind of work it out and see what it has to say through the lens of the Bible and through for our life today, okay? So today we're going to look at the idea of hope. And every Sunday, we're going to light one of these candles because each of the candles helps us remember one of the things. So today I'm going to light one of the purple candles, all right? So I'm going to light this one right here, okay? All right, let's see if we can... We'll all hold our breath. By the way, the exits are at the rear and on the side. Okay, so there's the fire. Just want to let y'all know. All right, there we go. All right, so beautiful wreath up here. So each week we'll light a candle on the Sundays leading up to Christmas. So today we're going to talk about hope. Hope is as I thought about hope is a really interesting thing because we all know what it is, but it is unique how we get to it. Hope to me is the intersection of three roads. Kids, you have an image on your page. It's not really a great one. It's the best one that I could come up with, right? So it looks like a modified duck, maybe. I don't know. It looks weird, right? Yeah, it looks like a piece of candy, something, all right? Right, anyway. So hope is the intersection of three ideas that all kind of come together, right? So the first idea that hope brings together is the idea of the present. So kids, number one, present, right? Present, right? Not like a Christmas present, but like the present, like what's going on in your life right now at this moment or in the moment where hope wells up. So it deals with what's going on in your life at the moment. But it also deals with what's gone on in your life in the past, right? So hope is this intersection of present and past. But also, it's not just the intersection of present and past, but it's also with an eye to and this is number four, kids on your outline, the future. The future, right? Because in the idea of hope, you have present, past, and future all rolled into one. And it is at that intersection where we're in the present, but we're drawing from the past while looking to the future, that hope comes. And that's number three, kids, hope, right? So you have to have, in order to have hope, you have to have a present reality, a past knowledge, and an eye to the future, right? For example, you know, if you're in a situation, you know, you're in a, let me put it this way, football, I hate to use football illustrations all the time, but we're here, so it's appropriate. So whenever I played football, I always hoped we would win, right? And here's why I had good hope. Like, you know, I knew that we could win every game that we were ever in. Why? Because presently I knew how we had planned during the week at practice, right? I knew we were ready to play, right? Past experience taught me that if we play like we practiced, then we'll win the game. So present was we're ready, we're prepared, we're at the game, we're there, we're on the field. Past reality says that if I do my job and every one of our 22 players do their job, offense and defense, then we'll win this game. Because present was overlaid with past as we look at to the future. Now, we haven't played the game yet. Now, I don't know what the outcome's going to be. But I know based on what we've done in the present and what has happened in the past that we have hope for the future, right? And that's exactly what hope is in every other area of our life, even as we'll see through the eyes of some of the guys in the Bible. So hope is the convergence of present reality, past knowledge, with an eye to the future. And in that nexus of those three things, hope springs up. And let me tell you, hope is a powerful tool. It is a powerful idea in our life. Let me tell you two quick stories and then we move on. One story I heard just the other day, and I'm trying to even remember where I heard it. I don't remember. But I heard a story of a guy who was climbing a mountain, right? Like true mountain climber, like snow, ice. It may have been in the Himalayas. I don't remember. But the dude broke his leg as he's like, and I'm not trying to over-exaggerate, he's thousands of feet up the mountain. Like, he's not up this mountain, right? He's like middle of nowhere, nobody's around, and the dude breaks his leg. Now, I've broken my leg before. Granted, it was a long time ago, but it hurts a lot. And I was on flat ground. Can you imagine breaking your leg and you're 5,000, 10,000 feet elevated and you've got to walk down or else you're going to die? But you know what got made the guy down? He kept hoping for one more step, for one more step, for one more step. And guess what? The dude made it down, survived, got to the doctor, fixed his leg up, he made it, right? Another story, I was watching a war documentary on Vietnam, and there was this guy, pilot, who was a medical guy, pilot, who got shot down, was in captivity for 3 years, through the jungle, like they stay here, then they go here, then they go here, then there, da, 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 da. And you know what, they interviewed him as part of this big documentary thing, you know what he said, they got him through, he hoped, you know what he hoped for, one more day, that was got him through. He said, the thing that got me through is I hoped for one more day. Because he told himself, if I can make it one more day, I can make it out of here. Right? Hope is a powerful tool. Hope can get us through some very bad situations and give us an outlook of a very bright future, even though our present reality may not look that way. And the place in the Bible that I think has the greatest hope of all the places in the Bible is the prophets. Now, the prophets, I'm going to be honest with you, Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Micah and Daniel and Habakkuk and Obadiah and all those little guys are really hard. Their names are hard to say. Sometimes they're hard to read. Let's be honest. Sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, what's this guy saying? But what the one thing they all have in common is they all present a picture of hope for the future. Because here's the reality. Hope is used over 160 times in the entire Bible, but in the prophets, we see it converge with all three of these things in one neat little place. Because see, the present reality, so let's talk about that. That's road number one. What's the present reality of the prophets? Now, each one of them is a little bit different, but the reality is that all of them arise in very difficult circumstances. Either the kings that are ruling over the area of Israel or Judah during their time, either they're ungodly, they're despots, either the people are rebellious, or a foreign enemy has invaded and overtaken them because they've been rebellious. Very few of the prophets arise in good times. Almost all of them are due their ministry, their preaching ministry, during difficult times. And so the one word that I could come up with to describe most of the experience of all the prophets was this: bleak. It's bleak. It's like very dull. It's hard. It's difficult. And many of them just don't even want to do it, right? Go read Jonah. Now, Jonah's a little bit different. But Jonah doesn't want to do his job, right? And Jonah is, in fact, one of the very few examples of people actually listening to the prophets when they tell their message. Jeremiah, he writes some 30 or so chapters in Jeremiah. If you go read the book of Jeremiah, there's at least 33 chapters, maybe a few more. And here's what happens with Jeremiah. Listen to me. Listen to me. Preaches for years, and no one listens to him. What did you think about that? Think about if you were at your job. Listen to me. Think about if you were at your job and for years, nobody listened to you. And you're telling them, the business is going under. We're about to die. This thing is about to close up. So much so that the people are walking up to padlock the building and you're saying, hey, they're right there in the parking lot. They're about to close us down. And the other people are inside the building, no, they're not going to do that. Because that's exactly what happened to Jeremiah. The enemy is surrounding, the invading enemy is surrounding, the Babylonians are surrounding Jerusalem. And Jeremiah is saying, hey, you need to do this. You need to, no, we're not going to do that. No, we're not going to do that. No, we're not going to do that. And what happens? They all get deported to Babylon. And Jeremiah and a few handful of people are left. Right? So think about that. That was Jeremiah's experience. For years, he's telling them the word of the Lord, and nobody listened. And so out of this present reality of bleakness, you would think, at that point, that you kind of got two options, right? You can go into hope or hopelessness, right? But the prophets choose hope because of past knowledge. And so what happens, remember, hope occurs when we have present reality overlaid with past experience or past knowledge. And so what was the past knowledge of the prophets? Well, it was all that God had done in the Old Testament. Think back. God moved through Exodus, and he moved through Moses, who was a prophet-like figure, to lead Israel out of the Exodus. And they remember that he gave them food in the desert and water in the desert, and then they conquered that great city at Jericho, and then they basically conquered the entire promised land, and time after time that he arose kings like David and Solomon, and he gave them judges to help them out when the Philistines and all these other people were taking over. And so time and time again, the prophets knew and could remember and had been told stories about how God had rescued his people when they needed it the most, right? And so you have present reality overlaid with past experience and past knowledge. And as we look to the future, the prophets had great hope. And they hoped in three things that all drew together in one person. And so here's what I want to read, a few passages from the prophets this morning. Here's what they had hope in. Kids, I believe this is letter A on yours. The prophets had hope in his coming, right? Let me explain that. The prophets were removed some 450 to 750 years from the birth of the Messiah. That's a long time. In fact, I did the math. That's a four. Malachi, the last prophet in the Old Testament, was about 450 years before Jesus was born. That's a longer period of time than when settlers first settled in America at Jamestown. Think about that. Imagine our history if the Jamestown people said, hey, the Messiah's coming. And you're like, when's he coming? It's been a long time, right? But they hoped that God would send someone to rescue his people from the plight they were in, just like he had sent Moses and David and all of these people before, that God would send someone to rescue them. And so here's what Isaiah and Micah say. Isaiah says in chapter 7, verse 14, you may have heard this. If you hadn't, here we go. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and shall bear a son and shall call his name Emmanuel. Micah 5, verse 2. But you, O Bethlehem, Ephrathah. I'll say that together. Ephrathah. Right? You got to do the on the end, right? All right. But you, O Bethlehem, Ephrathah, you who are too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me, who is to be ruler in Israel, whose coming is from old, from ancient of days. And so these are just two. We can look at a bunch of others. Here, Isaiah the prophet, long removed before Jesus comes, said, hey, there's going to be a time where someone special, the Emmanuel, which means anointed one or coming one, and then Micah says, where he's going to be born? In Bethlehem. And guess what? That's exactly what happens, right? Through the birth of Jesus, right? And this may be the most amazing hope of all, that Jesus would come, right? Because Jesus didn't have to come. He wasn't obligated to come. But he did, he willingly did anyway, right? You ever thought about that? Like, we just take it for granted, like, Jesus came, it's Christmas, like, duh. But the reality is Christmas never had to happen. But it did because of God's grace and mercy, because he willingly put it forth that it would happen, right? God didn't have to save us, but he did. And he sent Jesus, right? Who is this person that they're talking about. But not only did they have hope that he would come, but they had hope that he would triumph. Listen to Zechariah 9:9-10. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you, righteous and having salvation is he, humble and mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the war horse from Jerusalem. And the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall speak peace to the nations. His rule shall be from the sea to sea, and from the river to the ends of the earth. Four things really quickly that Zechariah says about the coming triumph of this one who would deliver his people. One, he'll be a king, right? He'll be a ruler. But not only that, he'll be a righteous king, meaning, or a righteous, if you want to know a definition for righteous, anytime you read in the Bible, here it is, right in God's sight. So that means this king is going to do right in God's sight, which is maybe very different from a lot of the other kings in the world. But not only is he going to be a king and he's going to be a righteous king, he's also going to be a saving king, right? Because Zechariah says he will save, he will bring salvation with him. And then lastly, which we'll talk about more in a couple weeks, he brings peace. And this peace and this salvation and this righteousness and this rulership and kingship shall cover the ends of the earth. And lastly, the prophets have hope of his sacrifice. For unlike other kings who rule and dole out judgment and tout power and fame and fortune, the king that they hoped, the one they hoped who would come, would not only be a ruler, but he would also be a giver, ultimately giving up his life. Listen to the words of Isaiah chapter 53. If you've never read Isaiah 53, I encourage you to go back and read it. Here's what Isaiah says about the coming one. He was despised and rejected. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds we are healed. The Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all, like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, like sheep that before its shears is silent, so he opened not his mouth. And we could read a bunch of other verses out of Isaiah 53, right? And so here's the idea. Here's the idea. The present reality of the prophets was bleak, but their past experience said God is going to one day rescue his people from their ills and from their sin and from whatever. And so they had hope that someone would come, and that this coming someone would be triumphant, and that this coming someone who was triumphant would also give in the form of his life, right? And therefore, they looked into the future, and they saw a brighter day ahead than where they were standing. And isn't that what hope really is? Hope says, even though my situation may be bad right now, based off of what I know, I have hope that tomorrow will be better, right? And that's exactly what the prophets did. They have the ultimate source of hope because they realized that better days were ahead in the person of Jesus Christ. Now here's, like, let's kind of bring this home to us because it's kind of up here, right? And so let's bring it down here. So the reality is for us today, though, all of the events that we've just talked about, the coming Messiah, the triumphant Messiah, and the sacrificial Messiah, guess what? All of those things are not hope-fors for us, but they are already realities that have happened, right? So Jesus has already come, right? He came. Mary, Christmas, that's what Christmas is about, right? Jesus' birth. And when Jesus came, what did he do? He ruled and reigned, right? Paul says in Colossians chapter 1, a great passage in Colossians, Paul says that Jesus, in his coming, he rules over everything, because not only is he Messiah, but he's also the creator. Like, he created the world. Therefore, he rules over the world. But not only that, Paul tells us in Philippians chapter 2 that not only did he come and he rules, but he also willingly gave up everything he had to be just like us, to die on a cross, to rise again so that we might have life. Right? And so all of these facts that the prophets hoped would one day happen for us have already happened. So follow with me, okay? So I don't know what your present reality is today, right? Whatever it is, present reality. It may be bleak like the prophets. It may be good. It may be great. It may be somewhere kind of in between, or you may be less than bleak. It may be terrible. But whatever your present reality is, your past experience and past knowledge is greater than the prophets could ever have hoped and dreamed for, because what they hoped might happen has already happened. And it is not a hope, but it is history. And so no matter what, listen to me, no matter what your present reality is, as a follower of Jesus Christ, you should never be hopeless in any situation in your life, because the reality of the past, that Jesus came, that he lived, that he died, that he rose again for you so that he might have a relationship with you and hope of heaven for you, that's already happened. So at no point in our lives should we ever be hopeless. One of the greatest verses, I think, and I've probably said that a lot, right? But truly, one of the greatest verses in the entire Bible, and it's a lot of times preached at funerals, all right, is this verse right here. And I can't remember exactly where it's at, but it's Paul again. Here's what he says. Paul says to believers, he's speaking to believers, believers, we should not grieve as those who have no hope, right? Because for believers, the grave is never the end. And so if Paul can say that in death we have hope, then there is no situation in our life that should ever be hopeless, right? You got a friend you've been praying for that hadn't come to the Lord, and you're about to be hopeless? Why? Be hopeful. You have every reason. You got a situation in your family, at your job, with some friends, a coworker. You have all the reason in the world to have hope, because the greatest thing in our lives has already been conquered through Jesus Christ, and that is sin, death, hell, and the grave. But let me give you two thoughts really quickly. Really quickly, okay? Because if we're all honest with us today, we have some barriers in our lives. Some, like, you know, like those railroad things that come down, railroad arms, ding, 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 right? And they will hinder us from being hopeful or having hope in the future. I'm going to give you two really quickly. There's a lot. They both start with P's. That's just the way they worked, okay? So just go with me, all right? The first barrier, if we're not careful, will be a barrier to hope in our life. We've got the present reality, and we know the past experience, and we've got the past knowledge, and we're about ready to be hope. But if we're not careful, the railroad arm comes down, and we stop before we get to hope. Here's the first barrier. Barrier number one, railroad arm number one, is the barrier of our psychology or our mind. Thank you, Nick. Way to go. Right? Because here's what a lot of us do. We think ourselves out of hope, right? We what if ourselves out of hope. Well, what if this happens? Or what if that happens? Or what if this? Or what if that? Or oh my gosh. Or oh me. Or oh wow. Oh, Our present reality hasn't changed, nor has our past reality changed. The only thing that has changed is the railroad arm of what if has come down in our brain. Well, what if this? And what if that? And maybe it should be fear. Maybe that's a better way to say it. But we logic this sucker out in our mind to death. And as my dad said, you know, we've beat the horse to death and then beat it some more. Right? And beat it some more. The reality hasn't changed, nor has the past experience and knowledge changed. But yet we're allowing a what if scenario that may never happen to come up. And so we are like, well, I just ain't gonna have hope, you know. Oh well. Just and then we fall into that pity and victimhood and all that, because we gamed ourselves out of it because we thought ourselves out of it. When just looking at the simple facts, you know, sometimes the easiest answer is the answer, right? And sometimes the easiest answer is hope, because it's, you know, the answer. But yet we get ourselves all up in our brain and we get all confused and then we lose hope. Here's the second barrier, which is very similar but a little different. It's the barrier of the physical, right? And here's what I mean by that. So the barrier of the physical is where we have the present reality and we have the past experience, past knowledge, and neither of those have changed, but we don't get to hope because all we focus on are the physical things that are right in front of us. Well, I don't have enough blank. If we only had more blank. If we people would do blank. If they would give me blank. If I had blank. All we're looking at is the technical word for this is inputs. We're just looking at the inputs. Well, if I had more money and more people and more time and more resources and people would, if they just listen to me. They just do what I tell them to do. If I had better this and better that, and if I had this or I had that, and we never get to hope because the railroad arm of the physical drops down and we can't get past what we see. It's kind of one of those, we can't see the forest for the trees, right? And hope is right out there. It is right in front of us, but all we can see is what we don't have, what we do have, and all of the inputs that we have or don't have. And our present reality hasn't changed, and neither has our past knowledge or experience. It hasn't changed either. What's changed is our viewpoint is only at what is right here, right in front of us. And God's trying to get us to take those barriers out of the way and to hope in Him based off of where we are and what we know and have experienced Him to be, right? So that we can look to a brighter day ahead. Now look, I'm not saying this is easy. Sometimes this is very hard. But let me just tell you, I have at points in my life been in the hopeless category, and that is a miserable place to live. It is dark, it is dreary, it is right? It's nasty. But none of us in here today, and I don't care what you've gone through, and you may have gone through the pits. And frankly, I don't know what that's like. I'm going to say that right now. You know, whatever you've gone through, I don't know what it's like. And what I've gone through, you don't know what it's like. All right? But what I'm telling you is, for us as believers, no matter what our present reality is, our past knowledge and experience of Jesus Christ conquers whatever our present reality is and should always put us in a place of hopefulness as we look toward the future, because all of us have a much brighter future ahead, no matter what's going on today. So here's your challenge. Here's your challenge. One, what do you need to hope in today? What situation, present reality, circumstance in your life do you need to have hope in today? And number two, what barrier, what railroad arm is stopping you from hoping in the Lord in that situation today? What do you need to hope in? What barrier is stopping you? All right, let's pray. Lord, thank you so much that you provide the ultimate hope through the person and work of Jesus Christ. Lord, we truly would be hopeless and have no hope in the present or in the future if it were not for you. We would all be lost and undone. We would have nowhere to go, no one to turn to. But because of you, Lord, we have all of those things and so much more. We have everything we could ever want or need. Lord, we have everything that we could ever imagine, ask for, right at our fingertips. Lord, because you desire to have a relationship with us. And Lord, when we enter into relationship with you, Lord, you don't hold anything back. But Lord, you give us everything that we need for life and faith. And so Lord, I pray that today, no matter where we're at, no matter what our present reality is, no matter what we're going through, Lord, I pray that you would bring us to a place of hope. That you would bring us to a place of hoping in you for the future, no matter what's going on in our life today. Because, Lord, you have called all of us to a much brighter future. So, Lord, I don't know where we're at today, but, Lord, I pray that you would work in the person's life who needs it the most today. Lord, help them to realize you're right there with them, holding them if necessary, moving them on toward hope. It's in your name we pray.